Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
McLean, welcome to Crypto Night. We are just so excited to have you as a guest speaker today.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch for having me.
Great. Well, why don't we kick it off by getting a little bit of your background and then the backstory behind New Cypher?
Sure. So I have kind of a weird combination of both software engineering and finance experience. Out of undergrad, I worked at Morgan Stanley doing investment banking. So things like M&A and capital advisory for tech, media, and telcos. That was from 2010 to 2012. I left and came out here to the Bay Area, mainly because I just wanted to get back to sort of more of a technical or product development role and actually like write code and, you know, build products as opposed to write pitch decks and build financial models. And around that same time that I left, I just got very interested and sort of fell down the rabbit hole of blockchain, obviously starting back then with, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum. I came out here, synced up with Michael, who is our CTO and my co-founder, and we were originally just doing a bunch of kind of experiments and sort of little projects in the blockchain space using things like Counterparty or Colored Coins, just mainly as a way to kind of learn and better understand and sort of grok and wrap our heads around blockchain and what it could potentially be used for. So this was back in, you know, like 2013. Not a great time to be building infrastructure and dev tools, which is what we like to do and what we're good at. So we kind of pivoted away and ended up building something called ZeroDB, which was an end-to-end encrypted database. It was kind of inspired by what we were seeing with blockchain and dApps was, you know, if you want to build a dApp, how do you store private or sensitive information sort of in a decentralized context, but still have it be usable. So what ZeroDB allowed you to do was to actually query encrypted data without having to share the private encryption keys with the database server. So this wasn't homomorphic encryption or kind of these fancy futuristic encryption algorithms. It was kind of just a little clever hack that we did. So I won't go into the details now, but basically, it allowed you to do relatively simple queries. So nothing, you know, too complex or crazy, like you couldn't run machine learning or any kind of, you know, fancy processing on top of encrypted data. But you could do things like, you know, searches, sorts, range queries, things like that. And that became actually a pretty popular open source project. But what was the most interesting piece was we built this sort of feature into ZeroDB that allowed not just you to query your encrypted data, but also you to grant access to other people to query your encrypted data. And we had discovered this sort of weird technology called proxy re-encryption that we were using to do that. And after a few months of trying to like convince people to start using ZeroDB and, you know, rip out their existing database software and replace it with ZeroDB, which is a difficult thing to do, we eventually realized that proxy re-encryption piece was actually the most interesting aspect. So we kind of decided to pull that piece out and make it this more general encryption layer that we could apply to existing distributed systems. So instead of having to convince someone to abandon their current database infrastructure and replace it with ZeroDB, we could just go to them and say, hey, you're using Hadoop or Kafka or, you know, some distributed system, why don't you just layer this encryption layer on top and you get all these sort of security and cryptographic access control benefits. And that was obviously kind of like the first iteration of what we built at New Cypher. So proxy re-encryption tends to be super useful or very well fitted for these distributed systems. Blockchain apps, obviously in our view, kind of being the most interesting and exciting one.
Wow, I have so many questions on that. Let me kind of break it down one at a time. So you are contrary to many of the companies that I have interviewed and founders, you've been working on this project for a while then, a few years, you would say, McLean?
Yeah, so depending on sort of how you define our start dart. I mean, you could define it in a couple of different ways. One being when Michael, my co-founder, and I first started working together in the blockchain space, which was, you know, back in like probably late 2013. Another being maybe when we started the actual company, which was when we launched, you know, ZeroDB as a project. And then another being when we sort of pivoted it back and came full circle back to blockchain. And we're building this data privacy layer for blockchain apps, which was a little bit over a year ago.
When did you start ZeroDB?
So ZeroDB was, we started that at the beginning of 2015.
Okay, so
yeah, so
kind of almost every couple of years.
Either about 5 years, 3 years, or 1 year. we've been working on, you know, different kind of iterations or flavors of what we have now with NewCypher. So very familiar with kind of the blockchain and data privacy and encryption space.
And you found that one of the key things that was missing was the ease of sharing your data that is encrypted with somebody else without sharing your private key.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, we're good at and that we're interested in is building developer tools and infrastructure. So we're developers ourselves, so it's you know, relatively easier for us to kind of see what are the missing infrastructure gaps. And for the blockchain space, obviously privacy is a big one. Even over the, I would say the last probably 3 months or so, it started to get a lot more attention. There's been a lot of new projects kind of coming up with interesting alternative approaches. But this problem of if you're building a dApp or really any kind of application, presumably there's going to be some sort of private or sensitive data that's associated with that application. It could be patient medical records, or it could be as simple as patient name or like usernames and addresses. And we need some way to have those be private and confidential. And when you kind of think about the context of a decentralized application where maybe you're storing that data on IPFS or Swarm or something, you need some way to control who can and can't access that data. So in a traditional centralized web app, it's very simple. You just have some server that says yes or no, you can access this data or you cannot. But obviously in blockchain world, we don't have that. We don't have some central trusted server that, you know, can decide. So there needs to be, you know, some alternative approach. And obviously cryptography is one approach. There's also, you know, with like trusted execution environments, some newer hardware approaches that are starting to surface. I think this sort of access control infrastructure, data privacy infrastructure is a big one.
And you found that the original idea behind ZeroDB was to see if you could build an entire database with these functionalities in there and see if you could convince people to swap out their existing database for ZeroDB. But then that looked like a sledgehammer approach. So you decided to look into ZeroDB and say, what is the most unique or useful feature in there? And that's where you pulled out proxy re-encryption out of it and you built NewCypher. Did I kind of get that right?
Yep, that's pretty accurate. So the way I think of proxy re-encryption is really fundamentally, it sounds sort of very fancy, but really it's just a more scalable form of public key encryption. And it's very well suited for like one-to-many or many-to-many data sharing patterns. And it turns out, like in terms of decentralized applications in the blockchain world, it's a very good primitive for building cryptographic access controls. So we've used that basically as this data privacy layer for blockchain apps that actually does not care where the data is actually stored. So it's agnostic as to whether you're storing data in IPFS or Swarm or storage.io, or even we have some users putting data in S3, so it can work with, you know, centralized file systems as well. So we are sort of taking a very kind of Unix style approach, where our view of the world is that in 2-3 years or so, there'll be a bunch of these interoperable protocols that work with each other and do one thing and do it very well. So we're focused on doing access controls and privacy very well and sort of integrating with all the other parts of the tech stack that would be required to build a dApp.
Wonderful. So why don't we start off illustrating proxy re-encryption with the Alice and Bob example that I read on your website? I want to get it down on podcast. Can you give us the Alice and Bob three-step use case?
Sure. So maybe the easiest way to compare it would be just first to compare it with, or first to give an example of just traditional public key encryption.
Yes.
So let's say you've got Alice and Bob. Alice is a data owner. She wants to share her data with Bob. What she can do is that she can just encrypt that data with Bob's public key, send it to him across the network. He can decrypt with his private key. It works very well. Where it might start to not work so well is if she needs to share that data not just with Bob, but with Carol, Dave, Evan, and so on. Let's say she needs to share that data not just with one person, but with 12, a dozen, 100, 1,000 people. She has to encrypt that data a dozen, 100, 1,000 times, send it across the network a whole bunch as well. It just doesn't scale very well. And what she can do with proxy re-encryption instead is that she can encrypt the data one time under her own key, and then she can delegate and revoke access to that data to pretty much arbitrarily as many recipients as she wants. And the way that works is she will create something called a re-encryption key for each of those recipients. And that re-encryption key can be used by a proxy. It doesn't have to be basically an untrusted proxy to re-encrypt or re-key or transform the data so that it goes from being encrypted for Alice to being encrypted for the recipient. And the magic part about proxy re-encryption is that that re-encryption or re-keying process happens without ever having to decrypt the data in the middle. So it's a direct ciphertext to ciphertext transformation. So the proxy that does this re-encryption never sees the plain text data. The storage layer never sees the plain text data. Only Alice, the original data owner, and whoever she explicitly grants access to.
I see. So I see. I understand it. However, how does Alice specify? How does she specify the identities of the recipients?
Yep. So in the system or in the protocol, basically every entity, every Alice or every Bob is represented by a public-private key pair. So what Alice will do is that when she decides she wants to share her data with Bob, she will create a re-encryption key that targets Bob's public key. So she, on her client side, she will create this re-encryption key, and it has two inputs. One is Bob's public key, and then the other input is her private key. So she'll use those two as inputs to create the re-encryption key, and that's a one-way function. So once the re-encryption key has been created, there's no way to decompose it to get the two inputs or the private key back out. And then that's a re-encryption key. And then actually what we've done it with NewCypher is taken that a step further. And instead of just one re-encryption key and one proxy, we split the re-encryption key up into a bunch of shares. So it's a split key proxy re-encryption algorithm. And then we issue those individual shares out to different nodes in the NewCypher network. And then Alice can specify some threshold number of those shares that are required. And assuming some threshold number of those proxies come together to do the re-encryption, then the data will get re-encrypted for Bob.
Got it. So you have a couple of different ways of doing this. So earlier on, the challenge was she had to encrypt it separately for each individual she is sharing with, which is a big chore. But now what Alice is able to do is to create this re-encryption key. And is there is no limit on how many people she can share that with, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
So a re-encryption key does target a specific recipient. So she would create a re-encryption key for Bob. She would create a separate re-encryption key for Carol, a separate one for Dave, for example. But she can create as many of those re-encryption keys as she likes.
So the keys are individual, but only the keys, not the data. The data encryption need not be individual. So what you have done is you separated the key encryption from the data encryption. And that's what makes this much
more. So if we wanted to go maybe sort of one layer deeper, the way that it works is similar to like PGP, where you encrypt the bulk of the data with a symmetric key.
Yeah,
and that's very fast. So the reason we do that is it's just performance. So you would encrypt the bulk of the data with something like AES or SHA-120 or something like that. And then you would encrypt the symmetric key with public key. And then you actually just do the proxy re-encryption on that encrypted symmetric key. And that had just a bunch of performance benefits. So like regardless of whether the bulk data is gigabytes or a megabyte or whatever, you're only ever doing the re-encryption on that encrypted symmetric key. So it doesn't, basically the performance of the system doesn't care how much data is being re-encrypted.
It doesn't care about how much data is being encrypted, and it also, the performance does not degrade with the number of people you're sharing it with.
Correct, yeah.
Got it. Okay, so can we now go to use cases? Can you kind of give me examples? I read in your white paper a whole bunch of those use cases, but if you could take one or two use cases and illustrate how, you know, kind of like a, McLean, if you can give me a before and after, you know, before New Cypher, mm-hmm. what would a developer have to do in order to get this functionality in that particular use case? And with New Cypher, how will things be much easier? Can you give that kind of an example for a couple of use cases?
Sure. So, I mean, fundamentally, New Cypher is just horizontal access control infrastructure. So anyone that's building a DApp that needs to manage private data would be a potential user. Where we've in practice, where we've gotten a lot of early adoption has been in a couple of different verticals. Maybe the easiest sort of give as an example would be in the healthcare space. So let's say you're building a healthcare application on top of Ethereum, and it's basically an application that allows individual patients to control their medical records. So you want to store patient medical records, let's say on IPFS, but you need some way to have those medical records be private, confidential, and encrypted, but at the same time, have those records be shareable with a valid recipient. So in this case, like a doctor or a healthcare provider. And so you would use New Cypher to ensure that those records are always encrypted. The data owner, let's say they switch doctors. So they would sort of issue a revocation command to the New Cypher network, say, hey, delete the re-encryption key for my old doctor. They could create a re-encryption key for their new doctor, issue that out to the network, and maybe combine it with, you know, some sort of smart contract that says, you know, I want to grant access to my doctor for 6 months. And then after that, the access should expire and he shouldn't be able to access it anymore. Whereas if you were to try to build this without New Cypher, either every time you wanted to share, well, either you wanted to share the data, you'd have to, with your doctor, you'd have to download the data back to the patient's client side. You'd have to decrypt it, encrypt it with the doctor's key, and then send it to the new doctor. Or he would just have to share his private key with the doctor so the doctor could go and decrypt the data where it's stored. So in the one case, it's kind of a clunky user experience that requires the patient to come back online, download the data, decrypt it, send it. In the other case, it's, you know, passing around a private key, which is, you know, not the most secure thing to do.
Excellent use case. Can you give another one? I think you had Dropbox, Slack type of use cases as well. Can you pick one of those?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the Dropbox would be just kind of like a decentralized and an encrypted Dropbox would be a generalized use case of that medical records example. So instead of medical records, just any generic file, you know, sharing photos, encrypted photos with your family or something like that, or just sharing work documents between your different devices. We've also, so just I'll sort of tie it back to actually real world users. One of the big verticals for us is data exchanges and data. So projects like Datum or Ocean Protocol that are aggregating a bunch of different kinds of data. This could be like browsing history or genomics data or self-driving car data, and they're encrypting it, storing it on IPFS or Swarm, and then they try to monetize that data by selling it to or renting it to a researcher or an advertiser or some other purchaser. And they can use New Cypher to grant access to that data, but conditional on payment. So you could say something like, I want to allow someone to decrypt this data only if they first pay 5 ETH to my address, for example. also being used as the access control layer by some of the new decentralized databases like Wolk or BlueZell and Fluence. So that's just a way for them to control who can and can't query against their databases. Kind of an interesting new use case is we're working with Origin, which is the sharing economy protocol. And they're using NewCypher for kind of generalized secrets management. So let's say someone were to use Origin to build a decentralized Airbnb, and Origin uses NewCypher to only share the address of a rental or a house once a booking has been made. So things like that are some of the use cases that we're starting to see in the wild.
Oh, very interesting. Okay. So thank you, Maclean. That is very helpful in understanding where it can be applied and how. Great. So can we now move on to some of the practical aspects? How far along are you in your development? What do you have out there? Can a developer that wants to try out your application actually try it out now?
Yep. So one of the cool things about what we do is all of our development happens in the public. Everything is open source. So, you know, just go to our GitHub, which is github.com/NewCypher. We do all of our development discussions on Discord. So we're very happy to engage with developers, with the community there, particularly for sort of like technical discussions. And then in terms of what we have available on our GitHub, all of the underlying cryptography, so the split key threshold proxy re-encryption stuff, is done and implemented. So we have our reference implementation is written in Python, and that we call that library PyUmbrel. We recently released a Go implementation called GoUmbrel. So both of those libraries are available. That's the underlying crypto system. For the average or typical developer that's building a dApp using NewCypher, those libraries are a bit lower level than what they'll have to use. So they'll use a relatively sort of more abstracted or friendly API. And we have what we call a mocknet, which is kind of like effectively just a private testnet that you can run locally to sort of start building against the actual API. In the next few weeks, we should have a public testnet where anyone can join and spin up a node. And then our current estimate for actual mainnet is sometime this fall. So everything is happening relatively soon, and we've got a lot of code available already for people to play around with.
Well, that's fantastic. So they can engage with you. They can go to github.com/NewCypher. They can engage with you guys on Discord. And NewCypher.com would be your website as well. NewCypher.com. Yep. Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah, NewCypher.com. And then we've got links to, you know, the GitHub and Discord and all the relevant sort of channels on the homepage.
Great. So Are you funded? Are you going to go the ICO route sometime in the near or down the road? What are your plans about funding and growth of this new cipher?
Sure. So we have raised some private funding from professional node operators. So we've pre-sold some of the tokens to people who will be running large staking operations for the new cipher network. And we do want and plan as of now to do a public sale, or it's, you know, we'll see what happens on the legal and regulatory front over the next few months. But our current plan is, once mainnet is ready and we've fully implemented the network and the protocol, we want to launch on mainnet and hold the public sale at the same time, so that, you know, people can purchase tokens and immediately stake those tokens to run nodes. So that's the current plan. The main bottleneck on, you know, a token sale side is really us getting comfortable on the legal and regulatory front. And, you know, hopefully there will be some kind of guidance from the relevant, regulatory authorities fairly soon so that we can do it in a compliant way.
And can you also explain, maybe I missed that, about staking and running the nodes, what is the role that these nodes and staking play?
Sure. So the function of the new Cypher token is to stake. So it's not a payment token. So if you are if you've built a dApp and you want to use new Cypher's proxy re-encryption services, you don't have to worry about the token at all. You would just pay for those re-encryption services in ETH. What the token does is if you want to be one of the nodes or the proxies in the new Cypher network and basically get paid by users for doing that, you have to stake the new Cypher token as a kind of collateral or bond. And we use that for a couple things. One, we use it as a way to coordinate the network. So let's say you've staked 10% of all the stake tokens, you'll get approximately 10% of the work and 10% of the compensation for that work. And then we also use it as a way to make sure that nodes are behaving correctly. So if you stake and you commit to staking, let's say for 3 months, but halfway through you just go offline and you never come back, you could potentially get slashed if you misbehave by, instead of properly re-encrypting, just returning garbage or gibberish, you could also get slashed. So we use it basically as a way to ensure that nodes are computing correctly and doing their job correctly through this sort of economic incentive.
Okay. And how many of these nodes do you expect to be running by the time the mainnet is up?
Sure. So what we did was the private sale that we held was for, I would say, like large professional commercial node operators. So people who will be running large nodes for a long period of time over the course of several years and providing sort of stability to the network. And what we want to achieve through the public sale is to hopefully get several thousand small independent node operators coming out of that. So we'll have individual buyer caps set equal to the minimum staking requirements and hopefully have several thousand, staking nodes that come out of that public sale. If we're not able to do a public sale in the near term for some reason, the network would still work. It just wouldn't, be quite as decentralized. There'd be several larger node operators as opposed to many thousands scattered all over the world. But that is really, for us in particular, one of the big motivators for us to do a public sale and one of the reasons why, we sort of committed to our community that we want to do that is because we get a lot of value from a very decentralized network of these re-encryption nodes that are ideally scattered all over the world. That just makes the network more secure, more censorship resistant, and healthier, as opposed to us just selling privately, all the tokens to 5 or 10 or something like that, big holders. We wouldn't get as much of the sort of decentralization benefits and censorship guarantees that we do, that we would through a public sale.
Wonderful. And how large do you foresee the market for new Cypher?
Yeah, that's actually super hard forecast to make because a lot of it just depends on how successful decentralized applications and blockchain applications are. So obviously the big bet that we as a company are making is that dApps in 2, 3, or 5 years or however long will end up being a very important thing. And if that happens, there has to be some sort of privacy or access control layer that people are building on. And so a lot of it just depends on how successful blockchain applications as a class end up being, which is, given that we're so early kind of in the adoption of this space, it's really hard to forecast how big the dApp market will be. And hopefully we'll start to see a lot of very interesting sort of native blockchain applications that are uniquely enabled by blockchain or tokens start to come out. And we've seen a little bit of that with like NFTs and things like CryptoKitties, but hopefully there'll be a lot more. And if that happens, sort of our vision of new Cypher is sometimes we've kind of analogized it to HTTPS, but for dApps. So, when you're using the traditional internet or a traditional web, you'll see the little green padlock at the top of your browser. And hopefully with new Cypher, if dApps are important, new Cypher will just be as ubiquitous as HTTPS is. but for decentralized applications.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's the reason I asked the question is if we, the DApp market is really your target market, and potentially all DApps could use new Cypher, and there's a good likelihood they might need it. Is that a fair statement?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think we're very much focused on DApps. So to the extent that that market succeeds, hopefully we will as well. And you know, our goal for New Cypher is that it's just the default privacy layer for the decentralized tech stack. So almost every application has to manage some sort of private data. And if they are, you know, hopefully we've done a good enough job with New Cypher that we're sort of the default choice for them to do that.
That's wonderful. MacLean, are there other questions that I should have asked or other information you wanted to share with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is if you are a DApp developer and you're either already building a project or interested in building a project that could potentially leverage New Cypher, we would certainly love to engage with you. So the easiest way to do that is just to join our Discord. All of our development happens there. All of our engineers and virtually the entire company just hangs out there all the time. So it's easy to get a hold of us there. And we're happy to support people that are building on top of New Cypher. We also actually, as of, well, today or this weekend, we released our proposed staking economics for the New Cypher. So that includes things like the inflation curve and things like that. And we're very interested in getting feedback on that from the community. So that's also, if you just go to our blog, I think it's the most recent post. You know, we're very interested in feedback from that. Are on that because obviously the you know economics and token economics and staking and inflation is one of the core components to the system, and we want to make sure that we get that right because that'll be an important factor of how sustainable the network is long term.
That's fantastic. Thank you, MacLean. I really appreciate it. This has been a great podcast. And listeners, I hope you have enjoyed the podcast. Please feel free to share this with all the other developers that you know that would find this information useful. And as always, rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Google Play. With that, over and out. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.